This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 45. Goodbye, Mitch. Coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, we talk about the retirement of Mitchell Johnson, his legacy as a fast bowler who wanted to knock people's heads off, and what we can learn when we're helping others to do that job, or helping ourselves to do that job. We also help a couple of players with problems that they've got. One guy who is in Kuwait and wants to talk about fitness training. And some interesting questions around wicket-keeping innovations. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket. And it doesn't matter who you are, it doesn't matter where you are. If you want to improve your game, or if you want to improve the games of others because you're a coach, then have a listen to the next half an hour or so of this show, and hopefully you'll pick up a few tidbits. My name is David Hinchliffe. I look after things here. And helping me to help you are two cricket coaches of very fine pedigree. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
Hello, David. You all right?
Very good, thank you. Yep. And secondly, it's Sam Lavery, who is the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. So I think the big news in cricket this week is Mitchell Johnson's retirement. He is no longer going to be terrifying a batsman in the way that he did before. Relatively young to retire from Test cricket, but he's done it. So I wanted to talk a little bit about Mitchell Johnson and how you see him as a bowler in terms of, you know, the history of bowling, and also what can we take from him both as coaches and as players in the way that he approached the game and the way that he bowled, because he's a very rare thing in these modern times, a sort of a throwback to when bowlers wanted to bowl as fast as they could and take people's heads off. You don't see that as much now, do you, Garris?
You don't see it as much now, and it's been massively refreshing, unless you've been one of the people at the other end on certain occasions during his career. And I suppose the one that we're really focusing on was the Ashes, and one of the articles I read yesterday talked about him finishing a number of people's careers off, and whether that's true or not, or whether it was a cumulative thing with some of those people, he certainly had an impact within that series, which was amazing, and it completely changed the complexion of the Ashes over the previous 10 years, I suppose, where England had been fairly dominant and all of a sudden ended up losing 5-0. And largely it was the fear factor, and it was also the skill factor as well, around Mitchell Johnson. I think the thing that I admire most about him, obviously his pace is magnificent, but it's the story, really, that where he's had periods in his career where it would have been easy to give everything up and not continue, or to walk away from challenge. But he's kept coming back, and often that's been, he's a quite sensitive soul. I think that's fairly obvious to those that have been close to him, and even to us observers a bit further away, that he is a sensitive soul, and we do deal with a lot of sensitive souls around the place. And he took a choice which probably challenged himself to stand up to the criticism, stand up to the song, stand up to all of the press, and try and find another way. And I love the story of him learning how to run in a different fashion by running around with cricket balls in his hands late at night through the parks in Australia, because he didn't want anybody to see him. You know, he was sensitive, didn't want anybody to be laughing at him by doing it in the day, so he took himself out in the pitch black and did that. But it'd have been easier for him to stay at home, have a cup of cocoa or whatever his beverage of choice, and not do that. But he did, and I think he's done amazingly well, because it'd have been easier for him to walk away at various times of his career.
And Lavers, I'm interested in your thoughts about the legacy as well that he leaves. Is he one of those unique players that is? You just have to say, well, you know, he was just one of those guys. It just, everything fell into place at the right time, and things came together for him in that way. And it's almost impossible to emulate him in that way. Or is there a model there that can be applied to young guys who want to bowl fast now, who are coming through?
Yeah, there probably is a model that we can work to. One of the models that we definitely can retain from, one of the themes that we can definitely retain from him is the mental side of his game, where he definitely didn't give up. So that's something that will live on in his legacy, is that he obviously hit a bit of a brick wall at one stage in his career and had a time where there was a lot of difficulties with his bowling, which was obviously his strength, and that was the one thing that he built his game around. And obviously he's come back from that extremely well. So I think it gives a lot of people a lot of hope that from wherever, whatever depths you kind of drop to or towards, there is a way back, and there's a way back not only to play a reasonable level and be a contributor to your side, but there's a way back to being the best in the world, which is what he did at one stage. So that's one thing that will definitely hold true. The other thing is that he's probably taught a lot of people, whether it's coaches or people just watching, that there is more than one way to do things, and he is slightly different. But his use of his action, which is quite slingy, and that idea of a stretch reflex action to try and generate pace, which a lot of people look at and probably aren't too aware of or haven't been too aware of in the past, is something that's really, really generated well for him. It's also shown people that the importance is much more than just the way you bowl the ball. And obviously one of the key things for him that improved the way he delivered the ball at the crease was how he adapted what he did in his approach to the crease and the way he changed his run-up, which had a massive impact on his kind of organisation and discipline of his lines and lengths to go with what was obviously incredible speed as well. So he's probably leaving a lot of lessons behind for people, but none less than don't give up. You can always recover, and there's always a way to keep improving and adapting your game to hopefully improve you as a cricketer. And really, no one should have a ceiling of performance, or the ceiling of performance is probably a long way away from where most people are.
Is that sling something that you can put into coaching when you're developing a younger bowler, and you see maybe they haven't got that same kind of stretch reflex? Is that something that you can coach, Gareth?
Yeah, I think the sling element comes from that delayed arm, doesn't it? Because certainly when his front foot was hitting the ground, his bowling arm was way below the line of his shoulder. And a lot of the time, that was where his pace came from, you know, having a real long pull at that point and moving the ball very quickly through a long arc made him incredibly fast. And, you know, Sam said that was one of his major asset, that arm. Because actually, if you looked at his front arm had completed its journey a long time before that. So I suppose that a much better technician than myself would say, what could he have achieved if he'd have got the sequence in between his front arm and his bowling arm more appropriate and akin to the things that Ian Pont and Stephen Jones and others are trying to work on. But that would have been an interesting one in itself. But the main reason he had that pace was that he had that really long pull. Now, you can call it a sling, you can call it whatever, but ultimately he was doing exactly what we're now trying to teach most bowlers to do, which is to have a delayed arm and for that to come over in a long range and get the ball down the other end. I wouldn't call that a sling. I'd call that a good part of technique.
Yeah, because it's coming the norm almost, you can say that it's not... To accept it as calling it a slinging action and put it in the category of Jeff Thompson and those type of bowlers is to not make it normal and not make it something that all first fast bowlers would like to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely right. But you go back to Jeff Thompson, I would say that his technique had to be pretty good to get the ball out at 100 mile an hour on a regular basis. So, you know, and that's what we're after, wouldn't it? You can have this notion of what technique is, but he must have been doing a lot of things well enough to get the ball to go down the other end at 100 and for people still to be talking about Jeff Thompson 30 years after he bowled at the top of his pace. I mean, that's a legacy, isn't it? And I'm sure that Ashes series in particular will still be talked about and shown on television in 30 years' time. And that's the thing that I will probably make him most proud, is the fact that it's going to be a proper legacy. And so, yes, he's come back, as both Sam and myself have said, really well. But his technique and particularly that delayed arm and his physicality, which was immense, and he kept working at throughout his career, enabled him to be watched in 30 years' time and people to go, wow.
Okay, let's wrap up this section with a yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the questions here, so let's fire away. Question one. Every player must put the team first ahead of personal glory.
Yes.
Yes.
Question two. Spinners will always be treated unfairly.
No.
No.
Question three. Video your throwdowns.
No.
Yeah.
It's time now for the questions section of the show, where we get a couple of questions from listeners and we do our very best to answer them. And then we pick a question from the two that we've tried to answer and we decide on the best one, and it wins a prize, which is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So a nice shiny prize on offer there for the best question. And the first person who has sent in their question by using coach@pitchvision.com is Nawaf. And Nawaf has quite an epic question, so brace yourself. He says, I'm an all-rounder who opens the batting and the bowling for my team. Being in Kuwait, there's not much activity other than cricket. The format is 2020 on concrete and turf pitches. How can I keep fit? I'm not keen to have a big, huge physique, but I do want to be lean, which helps me increase my pace in my bowling and my strength in the middle overs for batting. I've always wanted to join a gym, but as I don't have enough knowledge about routines, I've always felt too lazy to take the initiative. I usually end up having a lot of strain on my knee and my upper back. We're quite specific here. What do we think?
Well, my first point of call would be the strain on your knee and upper back. I'd be interested to know when that comes. If it's coming in your bowling action, then yes, obviously physicality can help with some of those things, but ultimately it'd be probably valuable to have a look at the bowling action itself and to see whether that can be made more efficient or safer in order to take those strains and stresses off of those two areas that you've identified. In terms of physicality, I watched a session that was run by Steve Wilson and Dan Hallisvay at the school this morning up on the pool shelf in the gym, where there was no gym kit needed, actually, because all of the stuff that the people were doing was body weight work, all of which is very specific to fast bowling, but actually can go across into being able to hit the ball hard and to bat in 2020 cricket as well, because both involve rotations and both transfer momentum up the kinetic chain in a similar way. So if I go through the list of drills that were done this morning, we had some glute bridging, so obviously working on hamstrings and the glute muscles in the backside. That was done on each leg, so we had one-legged glutes bridging and two-legged glute bridging going on. We had squats going on, just air squats, no weights involved in that. Just getting really good form, making sure that we're concentrating on the right parts of our legs and our glutes in that. We had bridging going on. We had some bench work, so core work. So we were getting into planks and doing side planks. We had people working on their throwing shoulders and bowling shoulders using bands which were attached to a wall by a hook. We had some broomsticks out where we had two people. One person was resisting rotation on the broomstick, and the other person was trying to make the broomstick move in a rotational fashion. We had people doing some drills up against the walls on their bowling action, which required proprioception and balance, and we had people doing lunges, overhead lunges with broomsticks above their head. Now, none of that requires any kit, but it all is very specific and very good for both bowlers and for batters in generating strength and stability in vital parts of our action, whether we're trying to hit the ball hard or whether we're trying to bowl the ball fast. So I would say you don't necessarily need to go to a gym, because for that you just need a band, which you can buy off the internet, a broomstick, which can come with a little thing on the end that you can get dust and dog hair out of the way with if you so wish.
You could do that as well.
You can do that as well.
Multi-purpose tool, Gareth.
Absolutely. I mean, it's brilliant. So any hardware store can get you that, and you'd be well on your way. So before you go to thinking about going to gyms, I would say let's get some of the foundation stuff in that I've just talked about there. And then once you get a real bug for it, because you said you've always felt lazy to take the initiative, get yourself a bug. And then at a time where you're ready, you can get some specialist help in the gym along some of the Olympic lift stuff that we put in later down the journey.
Fantastic. That one about squats as well. There's you can combine moves, which is a nice little add-on that you can do with those. So, for example, if you go down deep enough into a squat, you can hold it in the position of the squat for a few seconds to get that stretch. And then you can move your legs out to get yourself into a press-up position and do a press-up and then go back into the squat position and then stand up again. And that gives it just an extra little... You can do it slowly. You know, you can do it at sort of yoga position change speed. And that gets you into some lovely positions for core stability and mobility and flexibility and all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, gyms are obviously really useful and they make life quite easy because everything's there in front of you and there's a machine to do almost every exercise you can think of. Contrary to that, though, if you look at most guys who perform at a higher level, they don't use machines a great deal. So as Gareth said, you can recreate them fairly simply without a lot of expensive equipment. And as you progress, you might want to think about the gym for some of the options you get in terms of free weights, which buying yourself can be quite pricey, but you can get to a pretty good level without that. All of our guys at school up until under 14, under 15, somewhere in that bracket, will do everything which will be their own body weight. So they're simply using bars to do either pushing or pulling motions on, medicine balls to do throwing work, their own body weight for things like squats and lunges and crawling techniques and different variations on planks and different movements within a plank. So there are lots of options of things you can do. I'd just try and be a little bit specific about what you're trying to achieve and what the type of exercises you're wanting to do. So as an all-rounder, you're playing 20-20 cricket, and 20-20 cricket screams power and speed instantly. So a lot of what you'll do will probably be power-related, but we obviously need to develop an element of strength because strength is a requirement of power. So just try and think about where you need your power exercises and where you need your strength exercises. So as a bowler, there's probably an increasing amount of strength that's needed lower body just to support you. So there'll be a lot of strength and power work going on there. So the strength stuff can be nice, slow, controlled squats, which can be done very simply with a broomstick, as Gareth has said, or maybe just holding on to a med ball or holding on something to add a little bit of resistance once you become comfortable with them, but it doesn't have to be a particularly heavy one. You can then transfer them into slow controlled lunges. You can then do split lunges into jumps to create some power. So there's definitely a way you can do strength and power at the same time. Upper body, again, the power stuff's very easy, and the strength, again, can be created quite easily as well with simple chin-ups. Any pulling exercises, you can buy things relatively cheaply that can give you all kinds of variations of lifting. So things like TRX cables, which probably cost £30 or £40 on the internet, maybe even less, depending on the brand that you buy. But it gives you endless opportunities of how you can train your upper body, train your lower body. And they're largely, I would say, strength and stability based. But the power stuff, with a med ball or with a band, there's endless things you can do to try and get some ideas. And if you go online, and there are lots of people who can give you ideas of power exercises online. And as we know, if you Google the likes of Stefan, who's heavily into this kind of area, especially from the fast bowling point, he will be able to, on his website, I'm sure you can find lots of information which is going to be relevant specifically to cricket and to fast bowling. In relation to the couple of injuries, it'll be interesting to see when, as Gareth said, when they occur. That knee injury is not an unusual thing for people who spend a lot of time on concrete pitches. Usually it'd be knees and lower backs as opposed to knees and upper backs, so the upper back might be something separate. But yeah, try and be aware of the amount of practice time you do on those hard surfaces, and as if you're struggling with those knees. So if you can, try and be specific with your practice and try and be regulate it as much as you can, so you're not bowling 5-6 days a week off a full run up on a hard surface, because that's obviously going to put a lot of stress on your body, which you ideally don't want to put it through if you can help it.
And what about if he does decide he wants to go to a gym, but he's not quite sure about even though we've given him some drills here, he's not quite sure about, you know, whether he should just get stuck in or whether he should get some advice from a gym trainer or something like that. So how, if he does walk into a gym, is asking a gym trainer for some advice on cricket training a good idea?
I think one of the things you can do with any trainer, whether they've had experience or not, is to show them what your functional workload is going to be. So, you know, what movements do you need to be able to replicate, I think is always a great shout. Because even if somebody doesn't know anything about cricket, if you show them the bowling action, they can work out which parts of the body need to be strengthened or supported or made more stable. It's just a really good discussion. So whatever your purpose is, fast bowler or batter or wicketkeeper, if you show a good strength and conditioning coach, whether they've got any cricket experience or not, some of the movements that you're looking to try and replicate and become really good at, then I'm sure that they'll be able to support you in your development.
Having worked in a gym as well in the past, while I was at university, just kind of as my sole sort of role then, I actually found that most people who work there get pretty bored with the same kind of program that they're churning out day after day. And a lot of people come in and it's either people coming in and say they want to lose weight and tone up, or people saying they want to get big, and that's pretty much probably counts for 80% of the programs that people are doing in gyms, and that's probably the same now as it was 10-15 years ago when I was there. So I often found that if someone walks in and says they're a ski jumper, or says they're a triathlete, or says they're whatever it could be, something that's a little bit different, then it actually engages them, and it's giving them a project which they can gauge their interest, and they can try and use their expertise to actually make a difference. So it actually can capture the imagination of an individual there, and hopefully it would do if they've got a little bit of an interest in cricket as well. It would help, but whether they have or not, it should engage them a little bit, because it's something out of the norm. Maybe it's a little bit of work for them, but it's probably a little bit more interesting than someone else coming in saying they just want to get in shape a little bit better. So don't be afraid of talking to them. They're not receptionists, or they shouldn't be receptionists. They're there to try and help people. They're there to try and make your life and your experience in the gym better, so that when you go away and play your sport or do whatever it is you do, then you're better at it.
Next question is from Ravi. And Ravi's got, actually, he's put a lot of questions into one here, but I thought it was quite interesting, because trying to come up with some creative ideas of things to do to help the game. So maybe we can chat around a couple of them. Lavers, let me just throw the first couple at you, and then you can tell me what you think.
God, here we go.
First of all, Ravi says, is it mandatory for a wicketkeeper to wear pads? In a match, Dhoni gave his pads to another player and did keeping without pads for the rest of the over. Second question, can a wicketkeeper stand with only one glove on in order to get batsmen run out when he tries to run a single? We usually see it in the death overs. So it's a couple of wicketkeeping innovations there. Would that be something you'd be encouraging with your players?
Would I be encouraging them? The question being, can he not wear pads? I think I have seen people not wear pads, and in junior cricket they have to wear pads, or we certainly have a rule at school that they have to wear pads. But in senior cricket, if they don't want to, that's their decision. I don't see how not wearing pads would make an improvement to the wicketkeeper, though, other than speeding up the game in Dhoni's case, because he's trying to give someone else the pads. So I wouldn't encourage that. However, there wouldn't be. I don't think there'd be a reason for someone to be disciplined for doing so. Secondly, standing with one glove on, it's something that I've actually talked about with a couple of keepers over the years, which they've done when you get down to certain pressure situations. again, it's kind of dependent on the situation, but it essentially meaning that you're having to stand back, which is what you would imagine that you're keeping to a fast bowler, and then you're thinking about throwing the ball. So it's something that's definitely been sort of. We actually do a little bit of work every now and then with the keepers on just removing a glove, so being as fast as they can. But if that glove's already off and there's a necessity to throw, and we've got someone who can actually receive the ball, or they bat themselves to the stumps, then if they're confident in it. But again, we don't want to do anything in a match situation that we haven't trialled in practice. So if we were going to bring anything like that in, we'd definitely say have a good go in practice. Make sure you're confident or competent with the way you're going to do it, because you're probably going to predominantly catch the ball in that gloved hand, and you're going to be slightly different with your technique. So if we're doing it, it's because it's a pressure situation. It's an important game, presumably. So an important pressurised situation is one we want to have prepared for, and one we want to have practiced prior to that.
One thing about that glove one as well, it's important to note that you're not allowed to take it off before the bowler's bowled the ball and put it on the ground. It has to be off the field if you're not wearing it, or about your person. You know, you can put it into the back of your trousers or something, but you can't lay it on the ground like you would do with, say, a helmet. So that's an important...
Oh, is there not a 5-run penalty for that?
You're not allowed to do it at all. The helmet is the only thing that can be on the field that is not that is equipment, basically. And that's got to be behind the wicketkeeper. And so, Gareth, let's go on to the second couple of questions. One is about keeping, and one is about bowling, actually. So the first one is, the wicketkeeper is allowed to move forward a couple of steps when the ball is in play, but can he or she move much further forward when the batsman is coming down the track to play a shot? That's a sort of innovative one to try and gain an advantage, I suppose. And the other one is, a bowler usually says right arm over or right arm around. He's got to say that. But is it mandatory to mention whether he's going to bowl spin or medium pace? I think that second one we can answer straight away, can't we?
Yeah, it doesn't have to specify that at all. Depending on the quality of cricket that you're playing in, you might not know yourself when you're running up to bowl that ball. you know, I've played a bad enough cricket to know that I've played with people who would probably bowl their first time in a game and they wouldn't know whether it would come out with spin or not. So it's just the arm you're bowling with and what side of the stumps that you're gonna run up, and that's all that we know.
My favourite on that is on that second one. My favourite on that is when you've got when it's left arm over, and the umpire says right arm round, and then as keeper, it's happened enough times, or the other way around, it's happened enough times that I just whisper to the batsman, actually, it's left arm over. And he gives me a wry smile and we just carry on with the game.
Absolutely. And, so you don't need to specify whether you're going to bowl spin, medium pace, or even absolutely rapid like Mitchell Johnson that we spoke about earlier. I'm not sure that would help many of the England players, would it? I'm going to bowl left arm over incredibly fast. I'm not sure that would have been a help to them, to be honest.
But moving forward as a keeper, where do we stand on that one?
Well, you know, it's something that we see now, and it's something that we do see a little bit more of, because there are some keepers that don't necessarily get into that traditional crouch when they're standing back in particular. And that's something that we're seeing a bit more of, as people understand about themselves a little bit and how they move a little bit. And also the comfort element, because anybody like yourself who's kept wicket a lot will know that to bend up and down for, you know, 80 overs a day, 100 overs a day in some cases, you need to be comfortable in doing it. So some people don't bend down when they're standing back as much, and I've seen a number of international cricketers do that. Now, obviously, that gives them a little bit more scope to anticipate and to move around, because they effectively become more of a fielder in the outfield. Somebody fielding at point would be in a similar position. So it's one that we do see people moving around. And for example, you've given here about the batter moving down the track. I'm sure if a batter ran down the pitch and there's an opportunity for a throw at the stumps, then you will find that people will move out of their more upright stance into a forward movement. Now, whether that's picked up by umpires or whatever, I don't know. But you certainly do see it happening. And I'm not sure whether there's a you can be penalised for it or not, to be honest, but it doesn't seem particularly sensible as the game develops and the batters develop different strategies, if that was the case. Certainly from a fielding point of view, we're now able to introduce some more movement around anticipation. So you might want to correct me on this, David, but I don't see why the keeper should need to be penalised any more than a fielder.
I'm not sure how the new law applies, because it has been changed recently, hasn't it? Applies to wicketkeepers or not.
It has.
But always in the past, it's been, the wicketkeeper can move forward a few paces. I think the law says something like, a few paces or something like that. But you're not supposed to, if you're standing back, you're not supposed to sneak up to the stumps. Basically, that law's trying to stop. So I think it...
But how does that stand? How does that stand now with the shift in the law around fielders?
I haven't looked at the law closely enough to know for sure how that affects wicketkeepers. Whether it's just outfielders or it includes wicketkeepers in that. Now it would be interesting to see if that happens. If a wicketkeeper is standing back and he tiptoes up to the stumps as the bowler's approaching, what the umpire would say to that? My suspicion would be that the umpire would tell him to stop being an idiot and get back to where he was.
because it used to be about encroachment, that, didn't it? That you'd always get penalised for that in the past. But it's an interesting one to provide a new set of regulations and laws around fielders, but then for that not necessarily to apply to a wicketkeeper, because I suppose a wicketkeeper is always going to be behind the eye line, isn't it? Whereas if we're saying that you are allowed to move and anticipate a little bit more in the field, and lots of those fielders tend to be in front of the eye line, then surely they're going to impact upon the, as a distraction more than somebody who's standing directly behind the back of your head.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll have to get an umpire on and ask that one.
Yeah. Well, that's a bit like we see it in football refereeing now, don't we? We get... Bernard Gallagher in. I know a good mate of mine, Johnny Holder, goes on to Test Match Special comes up with these things, and it's one of their favourite slots that they have on the radio on Test Match Special. But
it is, except he always says dead ball. That's his get out for anything.
Is that right?
What happens in this situation?
Let's get Johnny on. Johnny H. Come on, mate. Give us. But it's an interesting one with the new regs, because I would suggest that if it's okay for a fielder who's in front of the bat and potentially in the eye line of a batter, then it should be okay for a fielder as well. And ultimately, we're an entertainment sport, as we've discussed over many weeks. Mm. And, we don't see people cheating, but I wouldn't call this cheating. I think it's just being a bit streetwise, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's soapbox time here on the show, and David's go. Off you go, fella. You've got a minute and counting.
One of the things that I've noticed at my new club is, because it's a big club with a long history, that there is a certain pressure of that history on current players. Now, cricket is moving away from tradition quite a lot. But the tradition of a club still weighs heavy sometimes on players. It's important to have history, it's important to have tradition. That's what binds you together as a club. Sometimes it's important to say to yourself that the weight of the history is causing us a problem. And if that happens, and you're not playing as well because of a certain level of expectation, a certain way that you're supposed to play, and a certain set of things that you're not supposed to do, then it can cause a problem. So I would say, respect tradition, respect the history of the club that you're at, and respect the culture that the club has, but also look forward as well, and also try and make sure that it doesn't become an anvil around your neck. And that is the end of the show for another week. We are going to do one more thing before we leave, which is decide on the winner of this week's competition. The prize of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com is to be decided between two slightly different questions this week. One from Nawaf about doing training in Q8, and one from Ravi, or actually four from Ravi, but four in one from Ravi. About some of the innovations around the laws of cricket. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I'm going to go with Ravi's one this week, and the main reason for that is that on a couple of these questions, he's completely challenged my ignorance, which is a bit embarrassing, bearing in mind that the roles that he's talking about largely is a wicket-keeping one, and I was meant to have done that for a few years of my life. So it's a bit embarrassing that you've done that. I've actually looked up the laws and still haven't got none the wiser, particularly about moving when you're standing back and coming into the stump. So Johnny Holder, if you're out there and you're listening, give me a bell, mate. You got my number.
Yeah, laws are always a tough one. How often do players understand the laws? It's a lot less than you think it should be, really.
It's probably more than the coaches do, by the sound of things, mate. That is for sure.
So if someone was listening to the conversation and they were thinking they wanted to have their chance to win the prize and have their question answered on the show, how would they be able to get in touch with us to do that, Gareth?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right. There are other ways to get in touch with us. Social media is available. Facebook is facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. And you can also tweet us on the Twitter @pitchvisionacad. There is a way to subscribe to the show every week automatically. It's the podcast app on your phone or your tablet or your computer. iTunes is a good example of that. You just go into there, do a search for Pitch Vision Academy and click on the subscribe button. Doesn't cost anything. And it gets you the show every week when it comes out on Fridays. You can also listen to the show in a couple of other ways. You can go to Pitch Vision website and stream the show from there directly, or you can download the file and save it onto your computer and listen to it that way. You can also get the show notes there as well. And all that is on the Pitch Vision website at pitchvision.com/academy. And then you just click on the podcast link there to get all the old shows and download and listen to well over 300 of them. So plenty of listening if you want to get stuck into that. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week. But until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavis.
Cheers, fella.